Welcome to a conversation with a working Irish politician who has been elected to the Irish Oireachtas, to the Irish Senate in particular. He's a failed candidate for the Dáil, but he's successful at getting into the Senate. And this is another one of our conversations, John Gilroy, and we're sitting in a cafe in Glanmire. Hello again.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
John, I'm not here to talk about myself, so I'll take that as a bit of politeness, you know, which politicians are renowned for, you know, the ability to, you know, to hold conversation on the spur of the moment with just about any voter, right? But look, what I'm interested in is we're in the middle of the summer in Ireland. Well, we're not in the middle, we're coming to the end of it. The Dáil in Ireland and the Senate in Ireland are on holidays, right? What have you been doing over the summer? Yeah, let's focus on that for a few minutes. I want to know, have you been sitting on your arse on a Greek island courtesy of Dennis O'Brien, right? Because you've got, you know, are you one of those that we've all heard of? What have you actually been doing over this particular summer 2012?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, Paul, and one which even the way you introduce it displays a level of misunderstanding of the life of politicians. And a lot of the cliches that are general abroad about politicians have been summed up in your introduction there, Paul. I'm not on holidays at all. The Dáil and the Senate isn't sitting. That's a long way different from being on holidays. I went to Spain 2 weeks ago for 1 week with my family and some of my children's friends. We took them off as well.
Were you paid for by a voluntary organisation which paid you to fly there and do some work for them, and on the back of that did you get the rest of your holiday?
No, the voluntary organisation that paid for my holiday was myself, Paul. My wife paid for it as well. She works too, yeah. I took a week off to go to Spain, bought three books, Tom Holland's historian books, they're the books I brought, sat by a pool, Paul, and read three books and chilled out, really. Came back in.
No, I want to know a little bit about those books. People might know who you were talking about. What kind of books were they, John? Very quickly.
Oh, very quickly. So Tom Holland is a historian. He's written, I think, four books now. One is Persian Fire. It's a history of the ancient Persian Empire. Really well written now. It's certainly not sultry, dead, old history. This is history brought to life. Fantastic stuff.
Is that Alexander the Great?
But mainly about Xerxes, who is the king of the Persians, and a view of European history through the eyes of the Persian Empire, as opposed to a view of the Persian Empire through European eyes. So it's really good, really good. The second one, Rubicon, which I haven't read, holding that back. That's a history of Rome. The next one was In the Shadow of the Sword, which is the end of ancient civilizations, really, is how Holland determines it. It's the rise of Islam, the codification of Christianity from maybe the 4th century onwards, and its relationship with Judaism, and really, really good stuff. And then the other book, the one I enjoyed most, I must say, is Millennium, which is a history of Europe at around the turn of the 1000s, the 11th century. And the feeling of the approach of the apocalypse across Europe as the millennium turned. It's really fantastic stuff, Paul, now, and I'd recommend anyone to read. I couldn't recommend these books any higher. They're fantastic, best I've ever read. And Holland's style of writing makes it so easy to read. His turn of phrase is one of the most attractive things about it. I found myself sitting on my own laughing out loud at a history book. You know, you couldn't imagine this had happened. But
and tell me, have you got a Kindle? Are you reading on a Kindle?
No, I read hard copy books, Paul. That's the only way to read a book, I think, is a book in hand. That was a week of reading. Read three of the books, and we'll read Rubicon now before September comes back, or before the end of September.
Okay, the rest of the summer then, what we call the summer. What else have you been doing?
Okay, look, I mean, there's the everyday stuff of constituency work, which is ongoing and never ending. It's important, Paul. There's no question about that. And that's the bread and butter stuff that politicians do.
But there are do you make yourself available locally here in Glanmire? Is that what constituency work actually means?
Well, traditionally constituency work used to involve advertising clinics and meeting people in their local town hall. I think the advent of the mobile phone has made that kind of constituency work redundant. My mobile phone number is out there. Anyone that wants to get it can easily get it. I have an office in Glanmire above the post office, and anyone can drop in there 10 till 5 any day. And so I'm always accessible. People, you know, so the idea of doing the old clinics where you go to the local community hall and advertise it and wait for people to drop into you, that doesn't happen anymore. At least I don't do it that way. If somebody wants to meet me, I ask them if it's convenient for them to come to the office. If it's not, I say to you, say to people, put on the kettle and I'll call to you. So, you know, we do both. So that's the constituency work. And then there's other things, Paul, that I'm particularly interested in, which are some policy areas around mental health and suicide prevention. That's one that I really feel passionately about. I'm kicking off a series of projects on that now as soon as September comes again.
And but during the summer, have you been, you know, reading books about those projects, or have you been phoning people up? Have you been lobbying people? What have you been doing about these so-called big issues that you're interested in?
Yeah, well, I mean, the idea of lobbying people, I consider everything to be lobbying. Canvassing opinions from everybody, from the minister to the ordinary person in the street, that's all lobbying as far as I'm concerned. Look, the project I'm doing is a nationwide series of public consultations with regard to suicide prevention for anybody who's been affected by this area or is interested in this area or has anything to say in this area. We've already had two of these, one here in Cork, as you can imagine, here in Lanmire, and the other in Navan. And out of these, hearing what the public have to say, there's real and valuable information coming and real and valuable insights to be gained. I thought, before I set out this journey, and I must say I'm a psychiatric nurse for nearly 30 years, so I have some, I won't say experience in this area, but I've a lot of, I won't say expertise, but a lot of experience in this area. And I want to bring that to bear, Paul, into the Senate. And I have a national platform as a senator, got some resources as well. And I think that it's incumbent on me to do what I can in this area. Can't say I'm going to save the world or cure the world, but we must do what we can. So what I'm doing here is we're kicking off, as I say, a series of national listening meetings, if you want. I don't know what proper term to put in it, but the terminology isn't important. And I'm doing that in consultation with other politicians across the country. Like, for instance, in Navan, nobody would know me in Navan. There's no point in me advertising a meeting of Senator John Gilroy in Navan. So I asked Anton McCabe, he's the mayor of Navan, a guy I know well. I asked him what he
hosts. Is he Labour Party?
He is Labour Party. Yep. And I asked him what he hosts this meeting, because he's the mayor of Navan. People would know him in Navan. And he said, God, of course. Anton was very, very happy to do it. So we did that in July. About 15 or 16 people arrived to the meeting. A bit disappointed with the numbers, of course. We thought we'd have bigger numbers. But following on from that, I've changed the format. I think I'm going to have smaller meetings, because the information and the insights that we gain from small meetings, so people are more inclined to talk more openly and frankly in front of a small crowd as they would be in front of a big crowd, I think has really allowed me to gain an insight which we can make a real difference in some people's lives with regard to this. And what came out from Navan was the coldness and the clinical nature of the inquest system into suicides. And I'll talk about this, Paul, again, because it's very important, and I think that we can actually change the way the clinical and harsh and cold nature of inquests into unexpected deaths, I suppose, not just suicide. And that,
but to have a cold inquest when people are so emotionally fragile, yeah, and vulnerable,
and when we call
must add to the pain.
It does, of course, Paul. And we do know from all the research that people who are bereaved by suicide are at a higher risk of taking their own lives themselves. So anything we can do to support people who have been affected by suicide has to have an impact on the rates of suicide. So the one insight that we're getting out of, from a meeting in Navan was that the coldness of the process is linked to the quasi-judicial nature of the process. You go into the courthouse, you stand around in the hallway, there's court cases going on maybe in a neighbouring room, you're called in, your relative's death is discussed in great detail in medical manner, cause and nature of the death, it's reported in the media, inquest result is given, and it's all over. Now in Navan, what they're doing, John Lucy is the coroner of Meath, and there's a group called there's a group in Navan, God, the name eludes me now just this minute, but Tony Walsh is the director of it. He's a great fella, fantastic guy, and what he's doing is, in consultation with the coroner, they've come together, taken the inquest situation away from the courthouse, and it's now held in the hospital. And that's a suitable setting where people who are arriving to the inquest are met by volunteers from the organisation. They're brought for a cup of tea, the process is explained to them, the local guard who will be given evidence comes down and joins them, explains what's going to happen, the coroner comes out and has a chat, introduces himself to the family, and a brave friends, and the media are agreeable not to be too intrusive in their reporting. And this has been reported to have been a very, very great change for the better in the inquest process. If it can happen in Navan and County Meath, it can happen anywhere. So we're talking to the Coroner's Society about this, talking to the Minister of Justice about it as well. Take a little bit of time now, but I think that we can make real progress in this. This would not have come to light unless we were listening to what ordinary people are saying. So very often, and I'm beginning to understand, Paul, that our policy response is disconnected from the lived experience of ordinary people who are affected by this.
And how much of your time, John, I without going into the detail of it, which is absolutely very important, I won't say how pleased I am to hear that this, because anything that can be done to make it more humane and help the survivors, is great. But how much of your, you're a politician, the impression I get is that you don't just swan into these meetings, you have to prepare for these meetings and phone people up and follow up after the meeting, is that right?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, first of all, when I decided, for the last 12 months, Paul, I've been appointed rapporteur on suicide prevention to the Joint Directors Committee on Health and Children, and that obliges me to bring a report to the committee about suicide prevention. The shelves in Leinster House are groaning under the weight of reports, right? So what difference is another report going to make? And probably not a great deal of difference, but we have to be honest about this. But the report itself may not be the most important part of this. What might be more important is the process of writing the report and the insights gained along the journey. So for the last 12 months, from the time I was elected actually to the Senate until the beginning of this summer, I've been meeting the professional organisations and agencies, community groups and the voluntary sector who are charged with doing something in this area. And I thought up to now, Paul, that everything that needed to be said about suicide prevention has been said. But I thought to myself, just before I sat down to write the report, maybe it'd be no harm to go out there and hear the views of what ordinary people are saying. So I embarked on this process probably in July. And we had two meetings. It took a bit of work to organise, I mean, no question about it. And the first thing about it is we didn't know how many people would turn up, didn't know what format the meeting would take until we had the meeting, didn't know what kind of issues were brought up. It's a very sensitive issue. We didn't know how people would react to it. There's a lot of things to be considered around these meetings.
And there are lots of issues about it. What kind of notes will we take? What record will we take?
What I do is I record the meetings on my iPad, right? We record it all so that we
on
have...
On your iPad? Audio?
Audio, yeah.
Audio, right.
And then I transcribe that then so that we don't miss anything.
Do you transcribe it or do you get somebody else to transcribe
it? The first two meetings I've transcribed myself because I kind of made a bit of a mess of doing the recording.
So you physically type up what you're hearing.
Absolutely.
That's a slow business.
It's a notoriously slow business, Paul, but it's very good because it reinforces into your own mind what you've heard at the meeting. I mean, I prefer to go through, maybe it's only my own sluggishness of mind that requires me to do this, but I think that it's thorough and you get a good understanding for what's been said at a meeting if you take the time to transcribe it yourself. There's probably more efficient ways to do it, but for the time being, this is what I'm going to continue doing it. So what I'm doing now, come September, is...
We should look at some software which will enable you to do that, actually.
That's fair, that's good.
Dragon have made some great advances, here in that area. We'd all love that, I think.
But what I'm doing now is, in September, when we come back, and the Senate comes back, in conjunction with my Senator colleagues from all parties and none across Senate, I've asked them all to facilitate meetings in their local areas, maybe two a week from now till Christmas, to see how we get on. All over the country, we're going to Drogheda. Dundalk is the next one. I know there's one in Limerick, I know there's one in Killarney, and there's one in Letterkenny, and one in Athenry. There's one in Galway with Trevor O'Toole.
But you're covering the country.
Oh, the whole country, Paul, will be done, yeah. What I was planning on doing is having one or two in each county. But having had the first two meetings, I decided it's probably better and more thorough if we do one in as many towns as possible. There's no reason in the world why this process would need to end. We could keep doing this, Paul, until we feel that we've reached the end of what people have to say. And you know yourself, we won't reach that end.
There'll be no end.
So
you're giving people a great listening to.
And other things that have come out of it really is that the policy is disconnected from people's lives. I really feel that, Paul, and I don't understand it fully, and we need to explore that further and try and determine and discern what that disconnect is. Third thing that's been mentioned out of these meetings is that we need further training for our GPs. There's no question about that.
Training for GPs?
Yeah, with regard to identifying the signs and symptoms of depression, and more importantly, of impending depressions. Very often, and people are telling me this, that they attend their GPs because of inability to sleep or general feelings of disturbance, that wouldn't be easily identified as the symptoms of an impending depression. And sometimes that's been missed. And perhaps some GPs, I'm not saying in Navan or Glamour, I'm not saying that, this is in my general conversation with people, I don't want to single out any particular area, but very often, not very often, but sometimes GPs are prescribing sleeping tablets for sleep disturbances, and that would be fairly logical, you'd imagine. But sometimes maybe the sleep disturbance is a symptom of depression, and maybe a better prescription would be antidepressants. I'm not saying antidepressants are the answer to everything, but there's a certain and valuable role for medication in this area.
Okay, we must stop on the details, because it's such an interesting topic. We could go on for hours,
and
right. But look, the impression then I have is that you have only had, I just want to check this before we finish, you have only had 1 week of complete rest.
No. I mean, look, over the summer, I do say that there's a lot of planning involved in doing what we're supposed, what I'm wanting to do in September, and there's a lot of constituents work well, but do you know what? This is the summer. Other people are on holiday.
Are you getting any exercise, John? Any physical exercise at all? I want to know.
Your
mental health is of a concern to me. What I mean, sitting on your arse in the pool reading history books, right, isn't getting physical exercise. What are you doing?
I know, Paul. I tell you now, I give up the fags there 12 months ago and put on a good bit of weight. In fact, I was gone too bloody fat, I can tell you that for nothing. And even my friends were too polite to mention it to me. But I got an allergy testing done, food allergy testing done, kind of, but in default, with a friend of mine who runs the company, and gave me a great impetus to lose some of this weight I put on. So in the last 8 weeks, Paul, I've lost 16 pounds by jogging and minding what I've eaten. I've still another bit to go, and anyone who's listening to this will say, "Be God, he must be a fairly robust character in body as well as mind." But look, another half stone or so to go, Paul, I'll be quite happy. So I'm jogging 5 kilometres a day, or maybe it might be more accurate to say I'm puffing and panting my way around a 5 kilometre circuit, because jogging doesn't really describe what I'm at all.
Well, I think all serious politicians should be joggers.
Oh, well,
now that's another proposition, another day.
So,
John Gilroy, we're going to stop.
Okay, that's great, Paul. Yeah.
Thanks again. I look forward to our further conversations with you throughout this autumn, throughout this year, so that I can find out more about what political life in Ireland is really like.
Okay, Paul, look, we'll talk again during the week.
Thanks.